Blog Talk Radio.
I just saw right before I came on air, we got some good news. I don't know how, I mean, like, it is good news, but just how much of good news is it? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and find out, because right now it's fantastic news, but does this mean that it won't go bad in the future? No, it might go bad in the future. I love how I'm talking about an issue that I haven't even put into context yet, and you guys are just listening to me ramble on. It's the TPP. I'll just get that out of the way right now. Got good news on that, but kind of, sort of, maybe won't be good news in a little bit, so we have to reserve judgment. But I'll kick it off with that in just a second. That's pretty much breaking news. I saw it right before I came on air here, so I don't have all the details in front of me, but I have enough to talk about it a little bit. We have The Guardian has a new report out about just how much oil companies are welfare queens. Answer: a lot, bitch. It's absurd how big welfare queens they are. Then we have a heartbreaking story about how the Republicans are trying to torpedo predatory loan protections for the troops. We also have, a little later on, the Marijuana Policy Project released a great ad since marijuana legalization gained a little bit of steam in Texas. Everybody's hopping on that, and they're like trying to push it through sheer willpower. Will it work? Probably not, because they have a crazy fucking governor, and I don't even know if it'll get through the state senate, but it's out of committee, and I like the effort put in by Marijuana Policy Project, so I'll play the ad for you later, and we'll discuss that. Also, got your typical Fox News blowhard idiots, no surprise there, and Alan West is convinced not only do we have Sharia law in America, we have it at Walmart. Yeah, they had a board meeting. All the heads of Walmart, all the shareholders and everything, they got together and they were like, what can we do that would be really popular? Oh, I know. Let's implement Sharia. Yeah, I'm telling you, that's exactly how it went down. And later on, senior citizens getting booty in senior citizen centers. Fun. Oh, I can't wait to do that story. All right, so let's get started here, and I'll kick it off with some good news you can say about the TPP. The vote to fast-track the Trans-Pacific Partnership and give Obama sole negotiation powers has failed. The vote was 52-48, but believe it or not, the Democrats filibustered, so the Republicans needed to get to that 60-vote threshold with Democratic help, of course, and they couldn't do it. So the Democrats filibustered President Obama. Well done. I'm impressed by that. And they were only able to muster up 52 votes to try to give Obama sole negotiating powers to deal with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, this is good news, but the scary part is this, that pro-TPP Democrats backed out at the last second over essentially minor disagreements. So it's not like you have the Senate Democrats, all of a sudden they're all really principled and they're against any more so-called free trade deals that are really just outsourcing deals. No, it's that there were minor disagreements about how exactly to implement the Trans-Pacific Partnership and how to negotiate the deal, which made it so that it fell apart and the Democrats actually stood up and filibustered it. So they want some say. The Democrats who filibustered want some say in the final provisions of the bill. But again, to be clear, many of them do want a bill. So we give credit today, but it's tentative because, you know, this may change a week from now, 2 weeks from now, fuck, tomorrow for all I know. Something could happen where they work out something, Mitch McConnell and President Obama and some Senate Democrats work out something in a backroom deal, and boom, we're all fucked and the TPP gets put into place. But here's one of the areas where there's still disagreement, and I think this is hilarious because it's really telling about the difference between the two parties here. Quote, one provision, this is from Huffington Post, one provision, a ban on imports of goods manufactured with child labor, is opposed by many Republicans. Classic Republican douchebag move. Like, all those principled stands we took against giving more power to President Obama and having a unitary executive be tyrannical, forget all that. We're now on the side of him doing whatever he wants, at least in the realm of trade deals. And also, we support child labor. Have they ever supported anything good? Have they ever been on the right side of any issue? You would think that in the year 2015, it's an open and shut case when you talk about child labor. Hey, should we add a provision that says no child labor? The Republicans are like, no, I will stand against that. I will filibuster if I have to. We will fight. We will have our provision that allows child labor. Now, the Democrats, what were they upset about? Quote, the other provision, which would require the Commerce Department to take action on currency manipulation, is opposed by Obama. So that I find fascinating. That's one of the provisions where some Democrats who are even for the TPP, I think Chuck Schumer is one, for example. So I'm not with him on that, but I am with him on the idea that if there's going to be the TPP, which I don't want, but if there's going to be that in place, well, you have to have rules against currency manipulation that would further, you know, screw over the United States of America and increase exports from the countries that have the worst human rights violations and worst environmental records and things like that. So these are the disagreements, man, and this shows you what's happened to our political system and specifically our political spectrum in America within the past 40 years or 50 years or so. We've gone so far to the right that the Democrats that were supposed to be cheering today, yay, you blocked the TPP, the only reason they stood up is on minor disagreements about, yeah, let's fuck over the American people with the TPP, but let's stop some of the worst examples of trade manipulation. So we have to stand up and cheer for these guys who aren't really on our team. They're just trying to prevent the absolute most in-your-face abuses of the TPP, like child labor, for example. At least the Democrats are like, yeah, I want to do the TPP and screw over our economy some more and forget the American worker, but at least let's not, like, give a thumbs up to child labor. Or like we discussed the other day, slave labor in Malaysia, who's now in this deal. We're happy Malaysia's in the deal. They have slave labor. We're like, whoa, we don't see a problem with that. Well, some of the more principled Democrats are like, okay, yeah, we're against the slave stuff and the child labor stuff, we guess, and maybe some currency manipulation, but yeah, let's still do the deal. Those are the good guys in this debate. So the overwhelming majority of people, the entire Republican side of the aisle, and President Obama, they're like, slave labor, child labor, I guess that's fine, whatever. As long as we get the TPP, let's go. And the Democrats are like, hey, come on, no slavery, but we'll do the deal. Look at how terrible our political system is, man. It's a joke, it's a joke. I'm smiling now, but it's smiling out of pain for how screwed up our system is. Isn't that unbelievable? Like, you would think in a system where you actually had a debate of ideas and you didn't have, you know, rampant corruption with all the corporations buying the politicians, here's how the TPP debate would go when somebody brings it up. Hey, let's do another trade deal and, you know, forget the effects of the other ones where we ship jobs overseas. This time it'll be a good deal. Shut up, Ted. Sit down, asshole. No, next issue. In a political system where the politicians represented the people, that's how the conversation would go. 1, 2, 3, over. Because even me, for example, I've been getting tweets like the Maryland Tea Party or somebody tweeted at me the other day and said, you know, I was expecting them to, you know, come after me in a negative way because I'm no fan of conservatism on this show. But to their credit, they were like, look, can we agree that principled conservatives and principled liberals or progressives can get together on this and try to block this? And I said, absolutely. So what you find is, when you talk to the American people, or when you look at the American people, whether they're conservative, liberal, moderate, whatever it is, we all kind of agree when it comes to the issue of more so-called free trade deals. We saw what happened with NAFTA and CAFTA and GATT and the WTO and how it screwed over the American middle class. So we can all stand up against that as regular American people. And that's what you find. And this is something that Noam Chomsky, of all people, speaks about a lot. there are certain issues where there's virtually unanimous agreement amongst the establishment class and the elite class. And it's a guarantee that the thing is eventually going to get done in one form or another. That was the case with NAFTA also. But when you look at what the American people want, the American people are lined up on the other side of it. And what does that show you? It shows you that there's a genuine disconnect between what the people want in what's supposed to be a democracy and the laws that we get. So you find that since the corporations want this, since the billionaires want this, since the elite want this, it's going to get done. There may be some tweaks here and there, but it's going to get done. Our voice means absolutely nothing. And we can give example after example on this. Raising the minimum wage. Even a majority of conservatives are with us on this. Look at the polling data. 80% of the American people want to raise the minimum wage. We haven't gotten it. Why? The corporations have bought the politicians. That's why. 93% of the American people, including a majority of NRA members, say, let's do universal background checks for gun purchases. We couldn't get it. Why couldn't we get it? Because the gun manufacturers pay the leadership of the NRA, not your run-of-the-mill NRA members, but your leadership of the NRA. And then they give the money to the politicians with the understanding that when they give them that money, you will oppose any gun reform, no matter how smart it is or intelligent it is or necessary it is. Because you're taking this money, just know it's from the manufacturers. They want something for it. They want your word that you'll never in any way, shape, or form pass a restrictive gun law, even if it's necessary and even if it's just a background check. So what we've legalized in America is an oligarchy. That's what we have. We have a kleptocracy or an oligarchy. We have government of, by, and for the rich, or of, by, and for the corporations and the establishment and the well-off, and everybody else gets screwed in the process. So while today, yes, we can cheer the Democrats for standing up and filibustering it this time around, I'm not very optimistic. I hate to say that, but it's true. I'm not very optimistic because if you read the details of it, again, the Democrats are really just saying, we're for the TPP, but we just want certain provisions tweaked and we want to have a little bit more authority in approving it. So they all can agree, let's screw over the American middle class some more, you know, but they want to screw us over in slightly different fashions. So thank goodness they blocked it now, but if I had to guess, in the near future, it will probably be passed in one way or another. With fast track or without fast track, I don't know, but I do think the TPP will, come hell or high water, eventually get passed, and we'll all be worse off for it. All right, next. The Guardian has a new report out with some incredible numbers which highlights just how much big oil is subsidized. And actually, I should be more clear when I use the term subsidized. That's really a word that we shouldn't use ever because it lends legitimacy to something that's really illegitimate. So let's not call it subsidized anymore. The Guardian has a great article on how the oil companies are giant welfare queens. That's a better way to frame it because, of course, if it was some poor black person taking government money, would they say, oh, no, they're just giving them a subsidy? No, that sounds too official in that scenario. They would try to demonize it and say, welfare queen, welfare queen. But somehow with corporations, they put a happier word on it to make you go, oh, that sounds official. I guess we're just going to go with that now. So let me rephrase that real quick. The Guardian has a great report on how the oil companies are gigantic welfare queens. They say, quote, listen to these numbers. ExxonMobil's upgrades to its Baton Rouge refinery in Louisiana are benefiting from $119 million of state subsidies, their words, with the support starting in 2011, when the company made $41 billion in profit. Whoa. Look at that. They're saying that ExxonMobil got $119 million handed to them for nothing, a corporate welfare check for nothing. And that same time that they were getting that money, they made $41 billion in profit. That makes no sense. Think about it. Take away the term corporation and just assume it's like an individual. Let's look at it as if this was an individual. So a really rich guy, you know, made $1 billion one year. And the government just decides, you know, why don't we go ahead and give that guy an extra, whatever, $890,000? Because fuck it, we like him. Wouldn't everybody look at that and say, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. This guy just made $1 billion. He should be paying a lot of taxes on that $1 billion. So he should be giving money to the government. He should be paying into the system like anybody else would have to, a teacher, an accountant, or a construction worker. But instead, they're giving the guy money. Why is it any different for a corporation? That doesn't make any sense. They say, quote, a jobs subsidy, again, their word, scheme, worth $78 million to Marathon Petroleum in Ohio began in 2011 when the company made $2.4 billion in profit. So, again, a giant $78 million welfare check to Marathon Petroleum in Ohio when they were in the middle of making $2.4 billion in profit. Why do they need taxpayer money if they're making $2.4 billion in profit? Why would they need to hose the taxpayers, essentially? And let's understand this. The people who should be most against this are conservatives. The people who should be most against this are true capitalists. Because capitalists and conservatives are supposed to say, you know, hey, I believe in the free marketplace. I don't believe in big government. I don't believe in, you know, the government picking winners and losers and handing out money that I had to pay into the system. No, they need to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. And if they make money on their own, good, good for them. I'm happy about that. But why should we, the people, have to pay them? That doesn't make any sense. Well, here you have it, man. We're giving them $78 million when they made $2.4 billion in profit. Why? I saved one for last here. A proposed Shell petrochemical refinery in Pennsylvania is in line for a $1.6 billion state subsidy. Again, their words, not mine. According to a deal struck in 2012 when the company made an annual profit of $26.8 billion. Shell Oil got a $1.6 billion welfare check when they made $26.8 billion. How many politicians have we heard in the past month scream and yell and bitch and moan about $1.30 per meal going to a poor family so they can feed their kids, or a welfare check going to a family so they can keep a roof over their heads in the middle of a freezing winter? They scream about how terrible big government is when it's, in many cases, quite literally saving lives. In those cases, you know, they want to cut, 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 cut. Have you heard a peep from any Republican politician about this? If you ever hear them talk about it, they're on the other side of the issue, where they're in favor of, we need to incentivize further research and development here. That's what we need to do. And we need to give them subsidies. They would never call it welfare if it's for an oil company, ever. So they love big government. They bathe in socialism. They adore socialism as long as it's for their buddies and their donors. And of course it helps if the people involved are rich, old, and white, and they wear suits and ties. They only want to give government money to those people. And of course, what does this go back to? It all goes back to the fact that the lobbyists and the corporations themselves are paying the politicians, so the politicians are going to help out those people. You don't have, you know, grandmothers from Cleveland paying $8,000 or $30,000 to some Republican politician, you know. So the politician thinks, well, I'm not going to help the grandmother in Cleveland because what the fuck do I care about the grandmother in Cleveland? I care about the guys who paid me and took me on that great golf vacation and are my buddies and are in this good old boy network. So that's the problem, is the politicians are not representing the constituents anymore, and that's obvious. But let me wrap this up here and give you some final numbers, because these are actually worse than the last one. The last one was specific, the Shell welfare check. But listen to this. Globally in 2013, the most recent figures available, the coal, oil, and gas industries benefited from subsidies of $550 billion, four times those given to renewable energy. In 2014, the U.S. taxpayers were subsidizing fossil fuel exploration and production alone by $21 billion a year. That's their excuse. But they need the money for research and development. That's why you got to give them all the taxpayer money and give them all this welfare. Really. So, again, their companies, Shell, made $26.8 billion in profit. In profit. That's not incentive enough to do your own goddamn research and development? No, they need extra. They need extra. That's funny. When you go to your job, you know, do you say, look, I know you're paying me $60,000 a year, but you got to pay me an extra $100,000 because I'm not incentivized to do that, the work itself. I'm not incentivized to do the research here. Hello, I need an incentive. What are you going to do? I'd tell the government to give me money. They would laugh in your face if you said that. But for oil companies, everybody's supposed to go, oh, okay, right, research and development. We got it. No, no, no. The billions of dollars you're making without the government is enough incentive to do your own goddamn research and development. And I want to repeat the number again because it's so important. $550 billion. That's globally in 2013. That's how much the coal, oil, and gas industries benefited from subsidies. Their word, my word, welfare. So here's, to steal from Bill Maher for a second, here's my new rule. You're not allowed to bitch about welfare anymore until you first bitch extensively about oil companies. All right, next. So recently, we discussed a heartbreaking story about how the Republicans are trying to torpedo predatory loan protections for the troops. And at the time, when we discussed it a few weeks ago, Democratic Congresswoman and veteran Tammy Duckworth was able to step up and essentially block the efforts of the GOP. But now the Republicans look like they're about to succeed in torpedoing protections for predatory loans for the troops. Stay classy. So at jsager99 on Twitter from theprogressivecynic.com has a fantastic article on this. He says, quote, GOP politicians are currently trying to help payday lenders and banks exploit our troops with predatory lending practices. In 2006, a law was passed that would allow the Department of Defense to restrict banks and payday lenders from applying exploitative interest rates when lending to troops. This was necessitated by the fact that lenders were giving short-term loans with annual interest rates well into the hundreds of percents, trapping thousands of active duty soldiers in endless cycles of debt. In order to support their families, soldiers would be forced to take out loans, which would balloon and require them to take out even more loans to keep afloat. He continues, last year, the Department of Defense finalized its rules restricting exploitative lending practices aimed at active duty soldiers and are now trying to get them implemented. Unfortunately, during the last 2 weeks, the Republican majority in the Congress has voted twice to delay this implementation process and potentially kill the reforms entirely. Currently, an amendment to the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that stalls these protections is being finalized by Representative Stivers, a Republican of Ohio, and will shortly be voted on. It is expected to pass and will be included in this year's NDAA, as Obama is unlikely to veto the NDAA over this provision, which would defund the entire military. It appears as though the Republican sellouts will be successful in stopping these protections and enabling continued abuse by unethical lenders. In effect, the congressional Republicans are trying to make it easier for legalized loan sharks to ruin the lives of the troops. So understand, even the regulations themselves, they're not like overly aggressive and like unfair to these assholes doing predatory lending. I think they cap the interest rate at like 36%, which is still exorbitant. But the Republicans are like, no, we're just going to stand up more for these predatory lenders, these payday loan people, and we're going to say we don't want any regulations. We don't want any regulations at all. Now, what's also interesting is that the politician who is trying the hardest to torpedo the new rules which would help the troops, you want to take a guess who donates a tremendous amount of money to him? Oh, you guessed it. The payday loan industry. It's Representative Stivers, and he took about $69,000 or $70,000 from the payday loan people. This is exactly how our politics functions. You know, here you have somebody who's just flat out been bought off by an industry that quite clearly wants to do wrong, not just by your average American, but also by the troops. And this leads to the bigger issue, and we spoke about this the last time we discussed this issue. How dare any of these guys say, you know, I support the troops, and the Democrats, they definitely don't support the troops. Remember, that was what, in 2004, the entire Bush campaign was run on that. They said, oh, John Kerry, he doesn't support the troops. Us neoconservatives, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, all the Republicans, we support the troops. We care about the troops. We're on their side. And, of course, what's hilarious is the argument they were making is, oh, you're more against the Iraq war than we are, then you don't support the troops. If anything, that's exactly backwards. If you supported the unnecessary Iraq war, then you don't support the troops. How is it support to send somebody to die overseas in a fight that we shouldn't be involved in the first place because they didn't attack us? So they managed to flip it on its head. But honestly, this is even a more egregious example of not supporting the troops because the issue is crystal clear. There are regulations to stop predatory payday loan people from totally screwing over the troops, and the Republicans are saying, no, we are on the side of the predatory payday loan people. God, time and time again we see it, man. We've also seen it. How many times have we covered stories of the Republicans have cut food stamps and affected however 50,000, 100,000 or more troops in the process? They blocked the creation of 27 new VA clinics. Remember when they were screaming about how bad the VA is about a year or so ago when there were issues with waiting lines and stuff like that, and they politicized the issue to no end? Well, they conveniently left out the fact that the Democrats repeatedly proposed a bill that would have created 27 new VA clinics. They blocked it. They filibustered it. So if you're angry, look in the fucking mirror. See, with them, there's always an ulterior motive, and they'll continue to give the rhetoric about we support the troops, we care about the troops, the other side doesn't, but your actions speak louder than your words. And blocking 27 new VA clinics, cutting the social safety net for veterans, trying to block medical marijuana for veterans when a lot of them have opiate pill addictions and things like that, and now standing up on the side of predatory payday loan people over the troops? Okay. We now know what your true intentions are. And in case you missed it, I want to repeat it. It was in the middle of that segment I just read through there. They already delayed the implementation of the new rules twice. So it's not like they're saying, hey, we're against it because we want to tweak, you know, what percentage is allowed, or we have a minor issue with it that we want to fix and then bring back up. No, no. They already delayed the implementation of the new rules to protect the troops twice. And this is attempt number three to screw the troops. And it looks like now they're actually going to succeed. All I have to say is this, man. Mainstream media, step the fuck up. This should be day and night coverage for the next week on CNN, MSNBC, all the nightly news shows, and especially Fox News. Because these are the guys, again, who say we care about the troops the most. Well, here you go. Here's an example to talk about it and bring a real issue to light. But you're not going to do it because you don't care about the troops. You care about the establishment and you care about the Republican Party. That's who you care about. Come back, a healthcare horror story to share with you guys, and the Marijuana Policy Project releases a great new ad. Stay right there.
I've been drawn into your magnetism.
Sure, we're back, guys. We are back. Quick break, because I got a lot of stuff in today's show, and certainly not enough time for it. A South Carolina conservative named Lewis Lange has a healthcare horror story reported on by the Charlotte Observer. They say, quote, Lange learned in late February that he had suffered a series of mini-strokes that left him with bleeding in his eyes and apparently a partially detached retina caused by diabetes. So he's actually going blind. The 49-year-old Lange, a self-employed handyman who works with banks and the federal government to maintain foreclosed properties, has never purchased insurance and always prided himself on paying his own medical bills. But he's already exhausted his savings paying for medical bills related to his eyes. His vision has worsened so much that he hasn't worked since December, which could put his family's $300,000 Fort Hill home in jeopardy, along with his health. He sought help from charities, but found he was either too young or too old for most agencies. So he turned to Obamacare, but he missed the enrollment period to get into Obamacare. Here's what his wife said about this. Quote, my husband should be at the front of the line because he doesn't work and because he has medical issues. We call it the Not Fair Health Care Act. So Lange now earns too little to get a federal subsidy to buy a private policy. So that's the exchanges. He earns too little to essentially get onto the exchanges under Obamacare. So he should be able to get his coverage from Medicaid. The only problem is his home state of South Carolina rejected the Medicaid expansion. For those of you who don't remember, under Obamacare, the Medicaid expansion, 100% of it is paid for by the federal government for 5 years, and then after that, it's like 90% of it is paid for by the federal government, and the state picks up 10% of the bill. So this guy and his family, they're legit focusing all their anger on Obama. Like I think they set up some sort of a GoFundMe page or something like that, and in the description they describe how, you know, oh, we blame Obama, this is the problem with Obamacare, this and that. And what's so upsetting and what's so sad about this is even in, you know, his most dire time, when he's at rock bottom, when he's faced with the facts, he still doesn't understand the situation. He hasn't diagnosed the situation properly. The problem isn't Obamacare. The problem is that your state, South Carolina, didn't implement Obamacare. If they did implement Obamacare, you wouldn't have a worry in the world about whether or not you're going to get the care. Because, again, the Medicaid expansion would have covered you. But your state decided we don't want to take part in that Medicaid expansion. Why? Because Obama. So the problem was caused by the, reactionary hatred of President Obama. But this guy's ironic reaction to his current situation is reactionary hatred of Obama. Oh, it's such a depressing story, man. It's such a depressing story. And I know people personally that they were in one situation or another. One person, for example, somebody passed away who was close to them, and they needed to find a new way, essentially, to get health insurance because they were under that other person's health insurance. And they decided to go a much more expensive route to pay for their health care, paying over $500 a month, because that route, they thought, well, this will keep me away from Obamacare. But if I go to the exchanges and I look, you know, through Obamacare, essentially, to get my coverage, well, I'm afraid of death panels, and I'm afraid of this, and I'm afraid of that, and I don't want Obama to kill me, essentially. Okay, this is why, in all seriousness, many of the narratives that come out of right-wing talk radio and conservative media, they're dangerous, and even in some cases, deadly. If you really convince 30% of the American public or something like that, that no, Obamacare really has death panels. And this guy, not only do you disagree with him politically, he's evil. Like, he's a bad person. Like, he's this communist Manchurian candidate dictator-like character who wants to kill you. And he wants to kill you through the health care and health insurance system. So stay away. If you've convinced people of that, Well, there are real-world consequences to that. And a perfect example is Lewis Lange here. He was so convinced that Obamacare was evil and wrong and bad that he didn't get in Obamacare when he had the opportunity during the enrollment period, so he had no coverage at all, and now he's going bankrupt and he's dying because he didn't get coverage through Obamacare and because his state, his red state, said we don't want to have anything to do with the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. So, again, what's so baffling to me is that their ideology and their belief system is just 100% wrong. They have everything backwards. Because not only is the answer Obamacare to what this guy's going through, the answer is socialism. There, I said it. The answer is socialism. How do you think this situation would have went down if he was living in Canada? How would it have gone down if he was living in Britain? How would it have gone down if he was living in France or Australia or Norway or Denmark or Iceland? How would it have gone down? How would it have gone down? I'll tell you how it would have went down. He would have went to the doctor, and he would have gotten help. That's the end of the conversation. I got nowhere else to go with it. That's it. That's it. Doctor, help, done. That's it. That's how it would have went down. Why? Because those countries have single-payer, government-run, universal health care systems. When you get sick, you get help, and you don't pay a fucking penny out of your pocket. Not a thing, not a thing. Americans don't realize how screwed over we are. They don't get it because they don't understand the full context of what other countries get and what we don't get. When we pay taxes, that money, about half of that money, is going to blow up brown-skinned people overseas, start needless wars, fund 900 military bases, fund the giant military-industrial complex. It goes to the corporate subsidies that I just gave you the specific numbers to, right? Billions of dollars to companies that make over $20 billion in profits. That's where our tax money goes to. Corporate welfare, pork barrel projects, and war. So when we pay taxes, that's what we're funding. When they pay taxes in a lot of the Nordic countries, it's like, okay, let's pay for healthcare. Yay! Let's pay for education. Yay! Let's pay for daycare. Let's actually take the money and do something intelligent with it so people won't get mad that we, the government, took their money. Over there, the government is scared of the people because the people say, you're taking my money. You better do something for me with that money. Here, it's the other way around. We're scared of the government. The conservative mindset on what taxes are, it's like, okay, here, I'll give you a little bit of money and I'm paying to appease you. Take my money and go away. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you demand accountability? Why wouldn't you say, oh, if I'm going to give you money, you know what you're going to do for me? You're going to give me health care. You're going to fully fund the infrastructure. You're going to pay for my education. You know, you're going to do all the things that a civilized government in the year 2015 should do. But unfortunately, we're behind these other countries, man. We're behind these other countries. And we have stories in America where somebody is dying because they don't have access to free health care. But ironically, the main thing that they're angry about is free health care. I don't know how you solve that, other than you have to drag the political system up to the point where the other modern political systems are and drag the people who are kicking and screaming into the year 2015. Because they might get angry and they might be abrasive and ignorant and dumb, but we're actually helping them whether or not they see it. Okay, now, let's go to the Marijuana Policy Project. Brighten up this mood a little bit here. The Marijuana Policy Project released a great ad in Texas since a legalization bill successfully got out of committee. This is a retired narcotics officer talking about weed.
I know of no instance in my entire career where someone was acting out under the influence of marijuana. People under the influence of alcohol are much more problematic. Law enforcement officials have more important things to do with their time than arresting people for marijuana possession. They need to be there to protect the public, to respond to crimes such as robbery, burglaries, rape, and murders. Our state cannot afford to keep arresting people and putting them in jail for marijuana possession. It's time for a more sensible approach.
Yes, 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 yes. The Marijuana Policy Project hit it out of the park with that ad. And I'll tell you why. And we've spoken about this before with other ads that I think they may have done. To get more progress on this issue, it's not going to come from people like me, because I'm already labeled, you know, in the U.S. at least, some sort of crazy left-wing progressive lunatic. So people already know what I'm going to say on the issue. People already know what Bill Maher has said, and he's going to continue to say on the issue. And it's good that we're still all trying to push the narrative. But to get real change from here on out, it's going to have to come from really old conservative white dudes who are like, you know, that actually don't make much sense that we're locking people up for smoking weed. By the way, that voice does not apply to this guy. just for the record here, I love that guy, whoever that retired narcotics officer is, because he's speaking the truth. You know, he's an old white guy, and that's going to click with a lot of people in Texas, let's be honest. And he's saying, you know, why would we waste our resources and our energy locking people up for something that's actually not even as bad as alcohol? I don't know how anybody can argue with that point when you look at alcohol versus marijuana. How can you argue with that? We all know what a bar looks like at 3:30 in the morning or 4 in the morning after, you know, everybody got fucking hammered and there was some sort of big game on TV and there's some people from, you know, rival teams in the bar, different fans. We all know what happens, man. I can't tell you how many times I've been out at night in the city or elsewhere and there fucking fights break out all over the place. That's something that happens when people are drinking alcohol. I'm not blaming the alcohol, and I'm not saying we should ban it, but I am saying it's certainly not an intoxicating substance that has the opposite effect. It's not a substance that, you know, once you get it in your body, all of a sudden, as the old joke goes, you want to eat some cookie dough ice cream and watch cartoons. That is what marijuana is. What's the worst-case scenario with marijuana? I'll tell you what it is. Somebody smokes it, and they get a little bit paranoid. But they get paranoid, and they get in their own mind. You know, it's not like a lash out at the world kind of feeling. It's not an anger, violence kind of feeling. That is what you get when you're super drunk and that's the way you respond to alcohol. Many people respond to alcohol in that way. You don't get that with marijuana. Most people are just relaxed and they want to hang out and be cool. And some people just get a little bit paranoid. But again, it's in their own head. It's not lashing out at other people. So how can anybody look at that system and say, yeah, let's legalize the one where people fuck each other up, and let's keep the other one where they relax illegal? No, the only way anybody could justify that system is if we've already had that system in place for so long and a lot of people are making a lot of money off of that current system. We've spoken about it before, but the lobbying efforts against the legalization of marijuana, I mean, that mostly comes from pharmaceutical companies. You know, actually, we spoke about this also, the DEA. Those guys are basically fighting tooth and nail to try to keep their jobs. I mean, their job is we need to be assholes to people who do drugs. So they're like, no, we don't want that legalized. Then we're out of a job. What are we going to do? So you have the entrenched establishment powers that are saying, no, we don't want this. You would think that the pharmaceutical companies would say, it's going to be legalized eventually anyway or decriminalized. So let's get ahead of it and let's, you know, come up with our own marijuana and sell it and make money ourselves. But they're still fighting it, because they really do view it as competition to antidepressants and anti-anxiety pills and opiate pills and other painkillers. So what you have is people with a lot of money and a lot of influence and a lot of power standing in the way. And let's not forget the roots of the drug war in the first place, racism. And that's not some sort of liberal, kooky conspiracy that I came up with. No, it's well documented. Did you know, for example, opium dens were banned before opium was even banned? Why is that? Because it was the Chinese immigrants who were working on the railroad who smoked opium, and they smoked it in opium dens. So they banned it because it was predominantly Chinese people who went to these opium dens, and the white men were afraid that their daughters were going to go into these opium dens, get high as fuck, and then have sex with Chinese dudes. So we've got to ban it. We've got to ban it. I mean, look, they're Chinese. I can't have my daughter having sex with a Chinese man. This is crazy. And the opium's going to bring the girls in. Can't do it. Can't do it. Again, look at the history with marijuana. Is it really not tied to the fact that it was predominantly a drug that was done by minorities? Please, if you believe that, I don't know what to tell you. It's counterfactual. You don't know the history of the drug war. It wasn't until the early 1900s, if I'm not mistaken, 1914 or thereabouts, that the first actual ban of drugs was on the books. People used to use cocaine after, like, dental surgery and stuff. It would numb the area of your mouth. It was a normal thing. You go and get cocaine. You get cocaine elixirs, for example. Same thing with opium. Kids used to be given opium so they can go to sleep at night. so they wouldn't be all fucking loud and rowdy and stay up an extra 2 hours. The parents say, just give them a spoonful of opium, they'd go to sleep. So this idea of like, oh, drugs are bad, they're just so bad, you don't understand, we got to ban them, they're so bad. Okay, but if you want to be consistent with that, then why would you stop at just the arbitrary drugs you picked out? Here, let me help you out. Ban Red Bull. Ban Monster Energy. These are drugs. Ban caffeine. Why not? You would have to ban alcohol. If you're going to have a conversation about banning drugs, again, you would have to ban alcohol before you ban marijuana, because alcohol is worse for people than marijuana. So this is clearly not an objective scientific standard you're working off of. The system is just operating off of momentum, and it makes no sense logically speaking. And to bring it full circle here, the Marijuana Policy Project did a great ad where they're striking the right tone and the right frequency, where they have an older white guy who looks kind of conservative saying, yeah, why don't we focus on locking up like murderers and rapists and people who do violent crimes? And how about we don't focus on weed? I don't really see much of a problem with weed. If that even convinced one person, which it very well may have convinced many, well then, again, they knocked it out of the park. All right, let's go to Fox News talking about transgender people. Oh boy. A Virginia school board voted to allow trans students to go to the bathroom of their choice, and the federal government is now applying pressure to get these non-discrimination laws in place at a local level. So Fox News, of course, threw a tantrum over it.
This apparently is being compelled upon us by the Office of Civil Rights through the U.S. Department of Education, under the office, the U.S. Department of Justice. And they're saying that Title IX, which was passed in 1972, somehow includes gender identity. And the notion that the federal government could reach into the 14,000 school districts across the United States of America and tell 90,000 school board members that you must comply or we're going to take away your federal education money is preposterous. That money is meant for the neediest children in our communities, for the hungriest children, for children with disabilities. And so is my federal government telling me that if I don't comply with whatever, this language or any other language, that I have to comply with their language or they're going to take away our children's lunch money?
Isn't it really a little weird that a school, which is supposed to be rooted in science and the scientific method, is teaching now that there is no difference between men and women, and you can change your sex, but of course that's contrary to basic biology?
Well, certainly that's what you heard in the meeting, and it was funny because I just only heard the audio, and you would think from the applause that they were cheering by the fact that that motion passed, but they were cheering the single vote that tried to echo a parent's voice. And that was what was missing here, is, you know, these are public schools for the public's benefit with public dollars. And we seem to say to parents, you know, we want your tax dollars to run our schools. We want you to join PTAs. We want you to be involved and volunteer. We want you to fundraise. And then we want you to go away, because anything having to do with policy or rigor of curriculum or something like this that has very much to do with personal privacy and dignity of all students and all parents is not something we want your comments on.
The left's war on biology continues. It's a weird moment in America. It's really nice to talk to you this morning.
The left's war on biology continues. Yes, yes, yes. It's the left, which is so fundamentally anti-science. It's us that has all the climate change deniers and all of the creationists. Anything that they accuse liberals of doing is what they do, essentially. I mean, we've seen this argument time and time again in different forms. So Rush Limbaugh does it with gay marriage, for example. No, we are not the bigots for being against gay people and wanting to take away their rights. You're the bigots for not accepting us being bigots. It's at the point where it's just not creative anymore. You just look dumb when you use these arguments. Everything, you just try to flip it. I know what you are, but what am I? You're somebody who just copied our argument, which is true, and flipped it on its head and tried to blame us of it. That's what you are. It's so easy to see what you're doing. I love some of Tucker's quotes there, though. Trans people using the bathrooms of their choice is, quote, contrary to basic biology. Oh, is it? No, see, Tucker, some people are male, and they're born male in every way. Some people are female, and they're born female in every way. Some people are born male, and they have, essentially, a female's brain. It's a male exterior, but you're a female inside, and you know you're a female, and vice versa. So acknowledging that fact of reality, what do you want to do if somebody's a transgender person and they went through all the things, they got the hormone replacement treatment, they got a sex change, and they went through everything because they know who they really are, so now the person who was a man is now a woman, right? What do you want that person to do? You want to go up to them, I, Tucker Carlson, will tell you what bathroom you can use because it's my right to tell you what bathroom you can use? Fuck off, son! Who are you? Here's my new take on this. If you are so concerned and so obsessed with what bathroom transgender people should be using and you want to get in and dictate that for them, I think you have your own sexual issues in your own head that you need to iron out. I'm serious about that. Because, here, take my stance on trans people using whatever bathroom they want from day one has been this. I don't care. They could use any bathroom that they want. Doesn't affect my life either way. But what kind of a person would be, like, touchy about this? Oh, I don't know what bathroom. What bathroom are they? Are they going to come in my bathroom? I don't want them in my bathroom. They can go in that bathroom. I don't know if they should be in that bathroom. People who are struggling with their own sexual identity, and they don't know what's going on in their head, and they don't know what they're attracted to, and they don't, maybe they see something going on there with trans people that they feel like they want to suppress something similar in them. So your response should be, who cares, man? Let them use whatever bathroom they want. And this is, we've seen this time and time again, especially from a guy like Tucker Carlson. He gets so outraged over issues that normal people don't get outraged over. Again, if you're outraged over what bathroom trans people are using, you have too much fucking time on your hands. And understand, if it's like an example of somebody using that as an excuse to just spy on the opposite sex in the bathroom, that's a different story, and that's a case where everybody agrees with you. Even trans people will agree with you and say, yeah, no, I don't want the fact that I can use the bathroom of my identity to mean that, 14-year-old boys can sneak in and watch women in the bathroom, but that's not what this is about. We're all against that, but you should be for trans people using whichever bathroom fits their identity. And I think this shows you a very clear difference between the priorities of right-wingers and left-wingers. Because, go ahead, man, go for it. You go on Twitter, you go to different websites, you go on YouTube, you go look at whatever forum you usually get your information from and your news from, and you'll see, what are the liberals, for the most part, talking about? What's Noam Chomsky talking about today? What's Glenn Greenwald talking about today? What have we discussed on the show today, right? Fast-tracking the TPP, big oil subsidies that are screwing over people, the troops being screwed by predatory payday loan people. Look at the issues we discuss. We're focused on things like war, the NSA, black people being murdered by the cops in a systemic fashion, the TPP, poverty. Look at what they're talking about on Fox News. Oh, are you? Which PP parts do you have? Are you going to go into the bathroom that doesn't allow the people with the PP parts that are the ones that I don't want to be in there? Because if you do, I don't like that. Let's talk about that for an hour and get outraged. It's so sad. And to put it simply here, grow the fuck up. All right. Let's take a quick break here, and then when we come back, I'll have a great jam-packed final segment for you guys. We have we go to the Fox News show Outnumbered to learn about how white men are the victims in America. Religion is on the decline in America, and much, much more. Old men in senior citizens' homes getting prostitutes. Hilarious. All right, stay right there, guys. Thank you. Boy, do we have some gems coming up here in this final 30 minutes. Okay. On the Fox News show, Outnumbered, they're going to talk about how Christians and white men are so victimized.
A Boston University professor is under fire for slamming white men on Twitter. Syeda Gundy is an incoming assistant professor of sociology and African American studies. She made several anti-white comments on Twitter over the several months. The tweets were discovered by a UMass Amherst student who compiled them on his website. Back in March, Gundy wrote, "White masculinity isn't a problem for America's colleges. White masculinity is the problem for America's colleges." And in January, quote, "Every MLK week, I commit myself to not spending a dime in white-owned businesses, and every year I find it nearly impossible." But the school is standing by Gundy and says she's just exercising her right to free speech. Andrea, I'm coming to you first on this. If this were in the reverse, and she were an incoming white professor saying this about black men, she would be eviscerated.
Yep. Yeah. So this is the debate. This is, I think, an applicable debate to, is this free speech or is this hate speech? But Harris, the last acceptable form of discrimination in this country now is two groups, one, Christians, and two, white men. And that's why she can get away with this. Why? Where are the organizations in defense of white men? Where are the marches? Where are the editorials?
Where are the organizations in defense of white men? I know a few. Do you know them? You don't know which organizations were pretty much for white men, white Christian men? She did say that Christians and white males are the only groups that it's acceptable to still discriminate against. There are some groups on the case, Andrea, hate to tell you. They're called the KKK. They're called neo-Nazis. In some cases, they're sovereign citizens. God, they're so dense. I was just speaking about this the other day. I can't understand for the life of me why people don't get this very basic distinction. What you hear from conservative circles all the time are things along this line. Well, we have a BET network. Why can't we have a WET network? White Entertainment Channel. And the answer is, every other channel is pretty much already that. The black people have like one or two channels, and you're mad that what? You don't have every channel? Well, we want one that explicitly says, for white entertainment. Well, you know, the hunting channel and the fishing channel, probably already that. But no, they want to rub it in. They want to say, oh, white entertainment, white. Now, see, the problem is this. Historically, empirically, when you look at reality, white Christian movements in America have not been tied to standing up for the downtrodden because the whites and the Christians were not downtrodden. Instead, what it was tied to was supremacy movements. What it was tied to is the KKK and neo-Nazi factions and things of that nature. And by the way, that doesn't mean that you can't have, like, Irish pride or Italian pride. You're allowed to have that because those groups haven't had power in America from day one, and they haven't taken advantage of that power in America from day one. But there's a particular sensitivity to white pride or something like that because we know historically what it's tied to, and it ain't pretty. And to draw a connection between, you know, people standing up for the Black Lives Matter movement or, you know, black pride movements or what have you, to draw a comparison between black pride and white pride, there is no comparison. One is standing up, and they're an oppressed minority, and they're fighting back to try to get equality, and the other one has dominated the system from the beginning in America, and they're tied to terrorist activities. So you can't just muck up this false equivalence of, oh, they're so put down. No, the reason why you don't need groups that are standing up in America for Christian persecution and white persecution is that they're not persecuted. I'm a white male. I'm not persecuted. I'm on the top of the chain. I was born into a system that was run the entire time by white males, specifically white Christian males. So they're already on top. So to try to say, oh, you can make fun of whites and Christians and it's fine. You're damn right it's fine. They're on top. That's why, just like in comedy, they always say it makes more sense to punch up. If you punch down, you're just a douchebag. If you punch up, it's, oh, okay, so they're fighting for a just cause, essentially. To not, it's like there's not even an attempt to try to grasp these differences. And I don't think there is. I think somebody like Andrea Tantaros is just really not bright. And she's like, I see discrimination against white men and Christians all the time. Yes, the 70% of the population in America are Christian, but somehow they're the oppressed minority. You know, somehow, these are the people, their holiday is celebrated by 90% of the American people. Isn't that amazing? More people than are actually Christian celebrate Christmas. You can't go 3 feet without seeing Christmas decorations and fucking nativity scenes and this and that. And they're saying, we are the oppressed minority. Really? How many states are there that have banned Christians from running for office? Zero. How many are there that ban atheists? Seven. Tell me again who's oppressed? But it is true, though, they're right, that the hate crime statistics against Christians went up dramatically after 9/11. Oh, no, that was for Muslims. I'm sorry. That was actually for Muslims, Sikhs, Buddhists, anybody with slightly darker skin than white people. But it's okay because we did see that great report earlier about how the NSA was spying on Christians even when they knew the Christians were moderate. But since they were Christian, they were spying on them because they're oppressed. Oh, no, wait, sorry, that was Muslims also. For example, the head of CARE, a human rights group, was spied on by the NSA because he was Muslim, even though he's a guy who supported and defended the Bush administration after 9/11 and did Muslim outreach to the Muslim community to say, we are targeting radicals, we're not targeting you. So he was on their side helping them out from day one, but he was spied on because he was Muslim. But no, there's no oppression of Muslims, there's no oppression of black people, there's no oppression of atheists. It's only for white men and Christians. And understand the biggest hypocrisy of all here. Andrea Tantaros, all the Fox hosts, were just piling on recently, except for O'Reilly is one exception and one other, I think. But I'm drawing a blank on the other one. But most of the Fox hosts were defending viciously and vociferously Pamela Geller. When Pamela Geller did the Muhammad cartoon contest. And they said, no, the main issue here is free speech. That's the main issue here. It doesn't matter if it's hate speech. It doesn't matter if it's offensive. It's free speech, and that's the end of the conversation. By the way, I agree with them on that. They're right about that. But what are you seeing here? The hypocrisy is exposed because they're only going to talk about free speech in this principled way when it's something they agree with. They agree with shitting on Muslims, so they're on the side of free speech there. But if you bring up to them, hey, I took a giant shit and rubbed it on Jesus' face on a cross, and it's an art exhibit of mine, would they say, free speech, we're going to defend your right to do that? No, they'd all of a sudden be against free speech. Here, when you have some not even all that outrageous tweets from a professor that say, hey, white masculinity in colleges is a problem, and, you know, oh, I try to support black businesses on Martin Luther King Day. Not even all that outrageous. And what do they say? No, this isn't free speech. This is hate speech. Fire her. So all the free speech crusaders are now anti-free speech because it's speech that they don't agree with. So spare me your fake principled nonsense when there's a drawing of Muhammad. You don't actually side with civil liberties. You don't actually side with freedom. You don't actually side with the right to speak your mind about any issue. You only pull that card when it's bashing somebody you agree with. When you don't agree with the person, that's totally out the window and your arguments change and you call it hate speech. So hate speech can only be directed against Christians and white men. Anybody else? Open fucking season. All right, next. Louisiana Republican Senator Elbert Guillory? I always want to say Gilroy, but I guess it's Guillory? All right, let's try that again. Louisiana Republican Senator Elbert Guillory was at a hearing on a science bill, and the idea was to strike down the teaching of creationism so that the kids are not idiots in Louisiana. Well, Senator Guillory was against it. He's pro-idiocy. So let's listen to him here give the most ironic reason ever to be on this side of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a time, sir, when scientists thought that the world was flat.
What?
And if you get to the end of it, you fall off. There was another time when scientists thought that the sun revolved around the world. And they always fought to ensure that anyone who disagreed with their science was a heretic. People were burned for not believing that the world was flat. People were really badly treated. My point, sir, is that not everyone knows everything. And in a school, there should be an open exchange of ideas. Knowledge only grows when people can talk about and have this intellectual back and forth, this discourse, with all ideas on the table. To restrict ideas is against knowledge and it's against education. Therefore, at the appropriate time, Mr. Chairman, I move that this bill be involuntarily deferred.
Oh, that was so bad. Oh, that guy is incredibly stupid. He's on a whole nother level of stupidity. He may have just bypassed Louis Gohmert in the marathon of stupidity. Did you really just... Scientists thought the world was flat. Scientists thought the sun revolved around the earth. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. That would be the religious leaders thought those things. He said scientists burn people at the stake in the name of science. If somebody said the world was round, they would burn them at the stake. Did he, in his own mind, mix the word science and religion? Did he, like, forget what both of them mean? Everything he accused scientists of doing is what religious leaders did. And by the way, that, you know, if he were to take out the word science and put in the word religion there, then everything he said would have been true. But he attacks science for all of the wrongdoings and evil doings of religion. God, that's so sad. And by the way, in case you're wondering, because I was, when I first saw this early on, I was like, why is nobody immediately responding and saying, untrue? They did go on there. There was another lawmaker who chimed in and was like, while I respect my fellow senator, Elbert Guillory here, allow me to politely disagree. And I don't know if you saw, one of the guys was smiling there when he said what he said. that guy goes on, one of the people who's at the hearing, the young kid there, he goes on to say, well, let's be clear about this. You're asking for more academic freedom, but academic freedom does not mean that in a math class they're allowed to teach 1 plus 1 equals 3. It doesn't go that far. And this is the thing, man. This is the tactic that the Republicans have been using on the issue of climate change, on the issue of evolution versus creationism. They've used this in many different areas. What they say is, teach the debate. No, you guys don't get it. There's a lively debate going on right now between the climate change believers and the climate change deniers. So just teach the debate. You got to teach both sides of the issue. It's only fair. You got to make it 50-50 because it is 50-50. So in other words, you say anything is debatable, and then you can say, let's teach it 50-50. But then all you need is one person challenging anything. You have to teach both sides. But there are no two sides. I mean, that's like saying, well, we teach that reproduction leads to babies, but somebody, when they were 6 years old, their parents told them, actually, a stork brings it. So you got to teach the stork theory. Hey, 50-50, academic freedom, got to teach both sides. There's a lively debate going on. That's the same thing when it comes to climate change. That's the same thing when it comes to evolution. And this guy was arguing right there, well, we need to teach creationism alongside evolution because they need the academic freedom. There's a debate going on. We need to discuss the debate in this intellectual back and forth. Intellectual, my ball sack. Did you hear what you just said? It was factually incorrect. You said scientists burn people at the stake. You said scientists thought the world was flat. No, they didn't. I got news for you. If something is incorrect, you know what ends up proving it to be incorrect? Science, because the scientific method, contrary to what people think, how they say it's arrogant, it's the opposite. It's humble. Because the scientific method has to come back all the time and say, ooh, we have some new evidence. Our old theory isn't looking too good. Back to the drawing board. Let's get a hypothesis. Let's test it. Let's make sure it's right. Let's do that over and over. And then when we know that it's true and it's a theory that holds up, then we discuss it. So science is not dogmatic. Science is not arrogant. Science is not this rigid, strict thing. No, all the negative things that the right tries to put on science are the things that actually apply to religion. The things that actually apply to their dumbass beliefs in the Bible and in Christianity and their dogmatism against climate science and, as you can see here, the dogmatism against evolution. That was so embarrassing that, you know, it's at the point now where I don't know how any of these guys get elected, you know. I know the people are not all that bright in some places, but goddamn, man, the dude just said that scientists burn people at the stake. That's so sad. Okay. Speaking of religion, let's get to some good news. There's a new poll out from Pew Research on the issue of religion in America, and the findings are great. So, first of all, in a recent world poll on religion that we discussed on this show, the findings were not so great. And we found that the trends in the West are not the trends worldwide. And religiosity worldwide is more or less holding steady, or if anything, people are getting a little bit more religious than they were. I was surprised by that poll as well. But that was recent findings, I think, in Gallup, and this new one here is from Pew Research. But in America, it is good news, because it's essentially the opposite. They say, quote, the survey recorded answers from 35,000 people and found a drop in the Christian share of the population from 78.4% in 2007 to 70.6% in 2014. Okay. That's a pretty big drop for such a tiny time period there. So again, 78.4% of people in America were Christian in 2007. Now it's 70.6%, not 76, 70.6. That's a pretty big drop, and we should all be pretty happy about that. They say atheists, agnostics, and unaffiliated rose to 22.8% in 2014 from just 16.1% in 2007. Wow. So recently we've been giving the number, oh, it hit a record high, 20% of the American people are unaffiliated. They say, I'm not part of any particular religion. Well, this new research shows it's even higher, that in 07 it was 16%. Now it's 22.8%, so basically 23%. So since the last time we discussed this, maybe a year ago or so, one of these polls about the numbers specifically from America when it comes to religiosity, there's been an increase of about 3%. That's fantastic. A 3% increase in just about a year of people who say they're unaffiliated. That's a big bump. So now here's the really important question. Why? Why is that? Now, they don't go into much detail about that in the article. Again, their job is to just say, hey, we asked people the question, here are the results, here's the raw data. So if you ask me, and if I were to have to guess or try to explain exactly where this growing sentiment and feeling towards irreligiosity is coming from, if that's a word, I may have just made that up, I think the answer is a bunch of things. So number one, I think religious lunatics. The rise of the extreme forms of religion, whether you're talking about fundamentalist Muslims or fundamentalist Christians, that has had an equal and opposite effect, an equal and opposite reaction. So people who, as you saw in the 1980s and the 1990s, you had the rise of Pat Robertson and John Hagee and Jerry Falwell and the crazy religious evangelical right-wing movement, the Bush administration, neoconservative, catered to those people a lot. The rise of those people has led to people going, yeah, anything but that. We don't like those guys. We think they're crazy. We think they're dumb. Also looking worldwide and seeing the rise of radical Islam in many respects. I think people look at that and they go, stop. No, 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 no. We don't like that. We do not like that. It's a primitive belief system that makes no sense, and we don't agree with that. So the rise of, ironically, radical religious groups has led to the rise of atheists, because it's the backlash effect of anything but that. So let's go into this group over here. The second thing is, I think a lot of people already felt that way. They already felt like they're not religious, but it's becoming more socially acceptable to come out of the closet. Now, I get it. There's still plenty of discrimination against atheists, and we talk about that all the time. We talk about how in 7 states in America, there's laws on the books that say atheists can't run. Now, those are unconstitutional state laws, but nonetheless, they're there, and it shows a mindset. Some polls show that people don't want their sons and daughters marrying atheists, and they wouldn't vote for an atheist. So there's still a lot of real, you know, sentiment against atheists, but it is becoming much more socially acceptable than it was in 1970 or 1980 in order to say, hey, I don't believe in religion. So I think people are just admitting it now when before they weren't. The third thing is, I think, celebrity atheists. Somebody like Bill Maher barking on TV every week for a decade talking about how atheism is correct, I do think that helps. I think the new atheist movement has helped. There's been a direct correlation in the rise of new atheists like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Daniel Dennett, and a rise in atheism in general in the West, in the populations of the West. So I think that helps. And I think finally, and this is probably the most important one, the internet. I think the internet helps tremendously because the access to information is so broad that if somebody says something that you think is fishy, you could just fucking Google it and go, oh, yeah, okay, Dan is full of shit. What Dan says is not true. I must fact check everything. So if you listen to your pastor, or if you listen to, you know, some dumbass televangelist, or your crazy uncle at Thanksgiving dinner say something religious that makes no sense, and you look it up and you find, oh yeah, that's not true. They conducted a study and it turns out that prayer has no effect. So you can research this shit now, and you can use it, and you can determine what's true. It's verifiable. So with that, I think a lot more people are using the internet and seeing all the information that's available, and they're going, yeah, those guys don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So it's a mix of all these different factors. If you ask me, and that is just my opinion, I'm just speculating here, but whatever the reason is, we do see that in the West, and specifically in America, there is a rise in people who are atheist, agnostic, and unaffiliated, and it's a good trend, and it's only going to continue. All right, now let's go to Alan West. Former Congressman Alan West recently wrote an article entitled, Sharia Law Comes to Walmart. No, this isn't The Onion. This isn't somebody satirizing Alan West. Alan West wrote an article that used to have that title. He changed it, and you're going to hear why he changed it in a second. But how silly is this human being? Allen, you're just a joke and you don't even realize it. He's one of those guys, he takes himself super seriously. But he doesn't get that 50% of the population, probably more than that, look at him and like, oh, God, you sad little man. So Sharia law is coming to Walmart, of course. Apparently, when Alan West was shopping, he went to check out in a lane that said no alcohol products. And the name of the cashier, according to Alan West, sounded pretty un-American. It wasn't like Steve, if you know what I'm saying. Maybe it was Muhammad. Maybe it was Tariq. Who knows, man? What was it? It was something that was pretty Muslim-sounding. So here's what he said. Quote, I pointed the sign out to Aubrey, who I think is his daughter, and her response was a simple question. How is it that this Muslim employee could refuse service to customers based on his religious beliefs, but Christians are being forced to participate in specific events contrary to their religious beliefs? Let's pause here. Your daughter didn't say that, dude. Nobody said that. You made that up and put it in your article because it fit with what you wanted to say. Don't make, he's trying to make it seem like, oh, even the young, naive child could see the hypocrisy of the evil liberals. No. You made that up. Let's be clear about that. He says, imagine that. This employee at Walmart refused to just scan a bottle or container of an alcoholic beverage. And that is acceptable. A Christian business owner declines to participate or provide service to a specific event, a gay wedding, which contradicts their faith, and the state crushes them. So, in other words, you know, where the liberals screaming about how this Muslim guy refused to sell me alcohol because he's Muslim. The liberals are okay when Muslims implement their religious beliefs into their business, but not when Christians do it. Aha! Hypocrisy on the left, I caught you. Now, it's funny because Alan West, of course, he's for the Christians being able to, you know, not serve gay weddings at their bakery or something like that. But is he for the Muslim guy not being able to serve him alcohol? Seems like, if anything, there's a little bit of hypocrisy on his side, not on liberal side, but the story gets much better. Listen to this. So after West posted the article, a Walmart representative reached out and explained that cashiers under the age of 21 were prohibited from ringing up alcohol and tobacco products. It had nothing to do with religion. Oh. No, you want to know why this story is so great? Because it shows you everything to them is confirmation bias. So in their mind, liberals, all the liberals love Sharia law, but they hate Christian law. They're hypocrites, that's what they are. So he already had that in his mind, and he's just looking for an excuse to make that point, even though that point is untrue. So he used this example for it. He's like, oh, no, a Muslim refused to let me buy alcohol because he's Muslim. So now I'm going to write an article about it. No, but that didn't happen. What happened is the kid was under 21, and for whatever reason, the law in the state makes it so that any kid under 21 can't sell you alcohol if they work at a business. Everything is confirmation bias. So, the liberals are hypocrites, we're the good guys. No, the liberals are not hypocrites. If that were the case that, you know, there were Muslims saying, because of my religious beliefs, I'm going to refuse whoever service, it would be the liberals would be the first one to stand up and say, no, we're totally against that. I'm pretty sure it's liberals who are the loudest, for example, in trying to cut off ties with Saudi Arabia and trying to at least make them make basic changes like stop beheading people for fucking sorcery and witchcraft and atheism. It's the conservatives who more make excuses for their buddies who are our oil sugar daddies. Okay, so there is no hypocrisy on the left. We are against it if it's religious law, when it's Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, whoever. We're against it. You just want it to be the case that we're hypocrites. But in reality, you expose your own bias, your confirmation bias, and you expose your own hypocrisy. Because you were angry that a Muslim maybe would not sell you something because he's Muslim, but you love it when Christians don't serve gay people because they're gay. And because the Christians say, based on my religion, I don't want to serve this person. So again, everything you accuse liberals of being guilty of, you're guilty of. All right, final story of the day here. Crooks and Liars is reporting on an interesting story coming out of a senior citizen center in Norristown, Pennsylvania. They say, quote, authorities say a man living in an assisted living facility has lost his housing subsidy after officials found a prostitute underneath his bed. The man, believed to be in his 70s, paid prostitutes using profits earned from peddling alcohol to fellow residents. He's described as a more mobile gentleman who went on booze runs for his neighbors. Okay. They now are refusing to give this guy the same subsidy that all the other senior citizens get for living there. So they're essentially cutting off his funding to continue to be in the assisted living center. They're saying, you're gone, because he dared to have a prostitute and he dared to sell alcohol to everybody that was there. I cannot tell you how much I disagree with the senior citizen center here. Dude, old people, they're not toddlers, okay? And they're not your dog. You don't get to punish them because they decided to do adult things. If you've been on this earth 70-plus years, I don't give a goddamn if you want to pay to have somebody rub your scrotum and suck you off. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if you're going to get mad at senior citizens for drinking alcohol. If you were cooped up in a senior citizen center 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I would be angry if somebody wasn't selling the senior citizen some kind of alcohol. Goddamn, man, that's the escape. The escape is that, you know, a few times a day when they get their pain pills and when they get some alcohol. No, I'm absolutely for this guy. This guy is an American hero. This guy is a capitalist, too. And Crooks and Liars, they made that point. They said, like, look, this guy's not a bad guy. He's a capitalist. This guy said, oh, I know how to finance the activities I want to do. I'm going to sell alcohol to everybody because I'm more mobile than they are. And I'm going to take that money and get some hookers. That's what I'm going to do. Okay, if there was ever a way to go out, if you had to be in an assisted living home, okay, is there a better way to go out if you're in an assisted living home than to have a party every night, make it like it was in college dorm rooms, and also have some hookers? Look, it's hard when you're that age. Nobody wants to have sex with you. Nobody wants to touch you. But you're a human. You have needs. So what are you going to do? I mean, you have to pay for it sometimes, right? So, and you guys know my take on it. I would legalize prostitution. I think it's crazy that it's illegal and it leads to more problems because it's illegal. I would legalize all drugs anyway. So when I look at this guy, I see a guy who's just living his life and not doing anything wrong. I certainly wouldn't cut off his subsidy or kick him out. To me, that's really puritanical and really draconian. They should give this guy a medal. All right, guys. I'm out of time. But needless to say, we'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. Everybody have a good night, baby. We'll talk to you. We'll actually check YouTube later for all the uploads. It'll all be up there soon, as you all know. And have a good one. I'm out. Peace.